This is another episode of Connecting the Dots podcast. I'm Brad Parsons, Vice President of Market Operations at Baptist Memorial Healthcare.
I'm Bill Cloud, Assistant Chief Medical Officer at Baptist.
Today, we are very excited to have Michael Hine with us. Michael has become a friend through his work at Medi Leadership and some of the work that they've done at Baptist, and we're very honored to have Michael with us today. We are going to unpack his book, Shifting Toward Unorthodoxy, 10 Unconventional Mindsets That Help Healthcare Leaders Succeed in a Complex World. Michael, thank you for joining us today.
I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you.
That's awesome. So, Michael, tell us, as we launch in here, tell us a little bit about what led you to want to write this book. Let's start there.
I had a friend, I was talking about writing a book. I had a friend and a colleague, and he says, Mike, if you need to write the book, write the book. And so I said, you know, I have to write this book. And it comes from decades of trying to answer this really simple question that is in some ways haunted me. Why is leading healthcare so dang hard? Now, most people would just say, it's hard, get over it. Like, it's always been hard. But for whatever reason, I wasn't satisfied with that. I wanted to know, why is this so hard? I asked my coaches, I had executive coaches, I asked executive coaches that. And I think this book is sort of a part of a journey over many, many years of trying to answer that question. And at least for me, I think this notion of complexity, there's answers to that question that lie in this field of complexity. And that's kind of what the book is about.
Yeah, well, we are really excited because I think you got a great book. I've had the opportunity to get an advanced copy and gotten to read it a little bit. And Michael and I have had several conversations. And I think this is very prudent. I think the timing is great for listeners of Connecting the Dots, but also leaders all around healthcare. This idea that healthcare is really the most complex thing ever created. And we say that all the time at Baptist. So I want to get your response to that right out of the gate. Is healthcare the most complex thing we've ever created?
It is complex. And I hear the word used a lot. I'm not certain everybody really appreciates what that means, what the implications are for us as leaders. So I'm not certain I'm willing to go the most complex thing. That sounds a little bit bragging to me. It might be the most complex thing we've ever created, but I will definitely agree with you that it's complex.
And so let's unpack that some more. Tell us about your definition of complex and how you landed there and kind of some of the differences between, complexity versus other types of systems.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot in that question, Brad. So for me, I try to draw upon the scientific definition of complex systems. And it really, the characteristics of a complex systems are that there are a lot of parts involved, parts and pieces. Science would call them agents, perhaps. We're talking about human beings. And that these parts of the system, they interact with each other in a highly interdependent way. And what I mean by interdependent is there are many, many connections between many, many parts unfolding and interacting at the same time. And they interact in ways that are nonlinear. That means A doesn't always lead to B. A leads to D, and next time it might lead to Z, which then feeds back on B, which happens to maybe interact with A. So this notion of nonlinear interactions versus the way we typically think about things, like think about our process improvement approaches. We oftentimes think, let's break this down into steps. This step leads to this step in a direct and preferably efficient way. So that is that's linear exchanges in comparison to complexity. And the other thing that I will add to this is there's a byproduct or result of this type of interaction between parts. One is this idea of emergence. That means something about the way the whole is working together results in things that we can't explain by looking at how the interactions may have happened between the parts. So emergence. And another really important consequence is these kinds of systems or complexity is very, very difficult to predict what is going to happen next. So I'll just put that. There's more to that definition, but I draw upon the definition of complexity. I think that's somewhat congruent with complexity scientists. I think the actual scientists may, you know, pick apart pieces of that. But those are the fundamental ways that I present it in the book anyway. So what else? What else did you ask me, Brad? I think there were many parts of that question, but.
Yeah, no, that's great. And again, I think, you know, it was well said. I think also this, if you could help us unpack the difference between a complicated system and a complex system. And, you know, sometimes we, again, at a minimum, healthcare is complicated. But I think you bring out great points in the book of it's more than that. And so I'm curious if, and I think our listeners will like to understand the difference between complex and complicated.
Yeah. Well, it's a really, it's an interesting division between what in the book I call the predictable world and the unpredictable world. Other authors would say, the sciences of prediction or sciences of predictability versus the sciences of certainty versus the sciences of uncertainty, the predictable world versus the unpredictable world. And in this situation, the complicated systems versus complex systems, complicated systems, unlike complex systems, we're quite familiar with the way of thinking about systems this way. These are systems that are reducible, meaning we can take the whole and we can break it down into elemental parts. Think about a car. I happen to have a 1929 Buick from my great-grandfather, the actual car he drove, and have had the privilege, I put quotes around that, the privilege of stripping that car down to the frame and reconstructing it bolt by bolt. And by the time I'm done, if I ever do get done, it's going to run like it should. It's never going to be more than its parts. And those parts, they interact in really elegant and beautiful, but directly linear ways. Like literally, I'm not a mechanic, but it's not hard for me to figure out how these parts work together. I can take them apart and because they're linearly related and logically connected and rational. That's another characteristic of complicated systems. The other most notable thing is they're predictable. They're designed to be predictable. And quite frankly, we not only can control them, we must control them. We must do things to it so it functions the way it's intended to do. And if it doesn't function the way it's intended, meaning it functions in unpredictable ways, there's something wrong with it. Like if I turn the key and the car doesn't start, there's a problem. And I'll try to figure out where that's coming from. And if I fix the starter so it works, the whole thing works like it should. Those are all characteristics of complicated systems. And that, quite frankly, is a lot different, fundamentally different than complex systems. Did that answer your question?
Absolutely. Yeah. A great answer. Bill, what do you think?
Well, I actually went through this when we're talking about a lot of my career. I've been a surgical educator. And so approaching an operation is a microcosm of interacting with a complex system. And the question, you know, all of these things that you talk about, you know, the degree of uncertainty, because patients come in and they don't necessarily adhere to a regular maintenance schedule. There's no specs for the parts that we created. There's none of that. So you're in the midst of an uncertain environment. So what it boiled down to for me and the overlap here with leadership is decision making in a complex environment. So that to me was a similarity. So Mike, talk about how you approach decision making in an unpredictable and uncertain environment.
Yeah, so now we're leaning into these places where the notion of complexity versus complicated versus complex systems has implications for us as leaders and how do we approach things. And, you know, Bill, the first thing that comes up to mind for me to answer your question is, think about this. If things are complex and emergent, that means it's really, really difficult for us to anticipate what the results will be. That means there aren't any right answers. Like a right answer for us means we have expected something to happen because we've done things. And what makes it right is it turned out the way we predicted it would turn out. But if we're in a complex situation where those kinds of things don't happen, it's really difficult to have the quote right decision. A lot of leaders think that's the role of leadership. I got to figure out this problem and figure out what the right answer is. But in a complex situation, the leader's role shifts in decision making, saying, okay, look, we don't know what's right. It may not even be a right answer. But what we can do is we can make sense of what's happening right now the best we can collectively. And we can make some decisions knowing that they're like experiments. We have this idea. We have this hypothesis. If we do this, this might happen. We recognize that unexpected things can happen. Let's do more than one thing. Maybe we do three things. And we watch what transpires as a result of our actions. And if it tends the whatever it situation we're trying to address go sideways, we just stop that right now. But maybe one of the other ones actually makes things move forward in a direction that we aspire to or we intend to. Notice how that shifts the leader's approaches, actions, and behaviors in the midst of unfolding change. It is, to me, quite a bit different than if we're dealing with a complicated system where right answers, in fact, do exist, and our problem is, our situation is to identify what the problem is, fix it, and move on. What do you think about that, Bill?
I really like that. It really aligns with, you know, trying to face decision making in an uncertain environment. The other thing that I discovered after dealing with this is that it was really helpful to not predict one particular thing. In other words, what are the things that are most likely to occur if I intervene in this fashion? So it's not just one thing. It's about contingency planning. So what if it's not this, what could it be next? And then what else might it be? And how do I prepare for that? So it was a matter of coming up with several possible outcomes and contingency planning how you deal with each of those outcomes.
Yeah, and then notice too, in addition to that, you have to keep open to this is something that I hadn't, this is not in my contingency plan. Yes. And you have to be okay with that. So that's part of the contingency plan is my contingency plan didn't work the way that I thought it would.
Yeah, then it becomes damage. Then it becomes damage control.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Perhaps. But also that deviation from the contingency plan could theoretically actually be superior.
Yeah.
It could be quite inferior. It could be equal to, it could be superior to whatever contingencies we had imagined, really the unfolding many possibilities that we, some of which we can expect, some of that we can have varying degrees of curiosity about, but then we still have to be open for the unexpected. And think about the ambiguity of this, like the ability of a leader to say, I don't know, not only that I don't know, I can't know for certain. I have to hold that. And the sciences, the emerging sciences of cognition is really interesting. Some folks have framed it this way, that the human brain's primary function is prediction. Mm-hmm. And if we're in a situation where our brains cannot anticipate what happens next, our limbic system registers that as a threat, like an existential threat to us. And we get anxious and we get uptight, or it stirs self-protection strategies for us. Oftentimes, immediately, we can get quite emotional about that. Handling ambiguity as a leader within complex environments, to me, is one of the answers to why I wrote the book, Brad, is why is it so hard? Because in complex environments, the uncertainty is really high.
Yeah,
and
Michael,
that makes us uncomfortable.
Well, no, that's great. And I wanted to jump in and say, you know, this the book really has resonated with me personally. I've been privileged to lead healthcare organizations and be in healthcare administration for over 20 years. And I really like this dialogue and discussion around why our work is so difficult. And it's pulling things that I've used tidbits of, but unpacking it in a deeper way. So I really, you know, for all the healthcare leaders that are listening to this podcast, we've actually asked Michael to join us for several episodes, because we think there's a lot that applies to our work. We think that there's a lot that we can discuss. And it really comes into also our management system, how we position systems that drive behavior in healthcare organizations today. But Michael, I love the way you said, you know, we have to hold this because leaders, so many times, and I'm one too, that wants to know the answer. I'm, you know, that wants to know what is going to happen. If I do this, then this will occur. And we've all been trained in that mindset and in that thinking way. And I think this discussion really challenges how we think about some of these key issues and how leaders can begin to hold this ambiguity. So I love the dialogue already, and I look forward to lots more of it.
Well, I want to just say welcome to the human race. It's not just leaders who want to have that kind of, like, we can see it play out in our geopolitics. We can see Absolutely. It play out in our it's humanity. We all want that. And quite frankly, we could even say we need it to some degree. So, yeah, I think that's at least in part. You know, Brad, what's coming up for me, since we're talking about kind of the introduction, I think it would be helpful for me to just, I feel a need to lay some constraints around the book, like some goals that I had when I wrote the book, not only why I wrote it, but the intentions behind it. The first thing I want to say is this. All I want to do or intended to do with the book was invite healthcare leaders to this topic of complexity, to be curious about and say, I wonder what this might bring for me. So it is an invitation to say, hey, think about this. It might mean something for you. The second thing, and I think this is where the real constraints were, it is an introduction to these topics. Like, I could pick any of the 10 mindsets that we'll get to later in some of the future podcasts. I mean, there are people that have made careers, lifelong careers around the topic. Like, there's a chapter on adaptability. Well, there's a whole portfolio of science around adaptability. There's people that are very prominent in this space. And one of the challenges for me was, like, how do I introduce this topic that is a whole body of science of which I cannot hold myself up. Like, I'm not a professor of adaptability, and consolidate that into a meaningful, accessible way in 6,000 words. That's a challenge. So by necessity, I simplified things to make them, not dumb them down. That's not what I did. But to make them accessible to people who, this is unfamiliar territory for me to go to. And I think the balance is, like, if you're a professor, you've got a doctorate degree in adaptability, if there's such a thing, you're probably going to find something in that chapter that you're going, Dr. Hine, what are you like? This is even to the, so simple that it's, they'd say this isn't right. That's the risk I took in the book. I think so far as people are interacting with it, we have a handful of folks who have had access to the early copy. I think I accomplished that. But I'm not holding this out as truth, like capital T truth, know this. And also, I think one of the key phrases in the preface is this statement. This is a how to think it book, not a how to do it book. And if that interests you, for me to unpack that, I'd be happy to. But that's really important statement about the intention behind the book and the scope.
Hey, Michael, I want to stop you there because we talk about that a lot. We've got lots of how to's. And today, I really see the opportunity to teach and to share and to have dialogue with leaders around how to think. Mm-hmm. So will you share a little bit more about what you think about that statement?
Well, the reader needs to understand, I am an executive leadership coach at this stage of my career. I've been in healthcare I just realized this like last week. It was kind of like this, oh my goodness, you are old. I have been in healthcare for 39 years. 39 wow. years. I started off as an intern, cardiac rehab, as working on my exercise physiology degree 39 years ago at North Memorial Medical Center in Minneapolis. I think it still exists. I don't know what system it belongs to. It was independent at the time. 39 years. Forgive me, Brad. I don't know why I went there.
No, that's What's great. There? Certainly the experience around what you've learned in how to think.
Oh, yeah, thinking rather than doing. So I am an executive leadership coach. And it's an inescapable part who I am. And we just have this fundamental belief at Medi, the company that I work for. We will do things differently if we think differently. And if we want to change on a sustained permanent basis, behaviors, actions, and approaches, that begins with how we think. And the book goes saying the way we think depends on the mindsets we hold. So I have absolute confidence. Like, Brad, if you were my client, I'd say, dude, you don't need my advice. You're already sophisticated, capable. I don't know anything about your system or very little. You know the context. You will take the approaches, actions, and behaviors that are well-suited to the environment if your thinking and your mindsets are matched. So I intentionally didn't put a lot of examples in the book. I think there's plenty of examples, but there's definitely not a how-to. Like, I'm not saying, hey, these are the 10 steps to being successful in complex organizations. I intentionally stayed away from that and just tried to stay in this space, thinking together with the reader about how they're thinking about leadership.
So, Michael, What do you mean by mindset? Describe what that is.
Ah, great question. So, you know, that's been a fairly popularized term. There's quite a bit of definitions out there. In my research, I didn't find like this clear definition of mindsets. Medi already holds a definition of mindsets. We call it the mental models, the paradigms, the beliefs informed by our emotions. So I just said, look, there's a set of beliefs, a set of paradigms you operate out of, a set of mental models you hold, and I call those mindsets collectively. And in the book, I try to explain how important these are. These are really, really important. Oftentimes, they're obscure. It's hard for us to see them, be aware of them. So they're so deeply embedded in us. And these mindsets, they literally filter what is real for us. Like, if you don't have a mindset that allows or is open to understanding the world through the lens of complexity, you won't see it. And likewise, as we're experiencing things, our mindsets tell us a story about what we're experiencing. It's this sort of self-reinforcing loop between our experience in the world, how we make sense of it. It both informs and is informed by the mindsets we hold. They are profoundly important for us to be aware of. So that's where that came from, Bill.
So you had talked about that, you know, you have several mindsets, I guess 10. Is there a mindset, a set of assumptions that is sort of encompassing of complexity? Like, what assumptions should be made about a complex environment?
You know, if I were to be honest, I probably would say the first mindset is on complexity in the book. And that's the global mindset, or at least I would say. And the ones that follow, it would be fair for the reader to say, well, these could be sort of subsidiary or components to the major mindset. And I kind of laid the book out that way with intention, beginning with complexity. There's a bit of a rational, at least I thought through the order of how those unfolded. Mm-hmm. And so you could say, for example, there's a mindset on uncertainty. You could say, well, isn't that part of complexity? I said, it absolutely is. And so think of it more like the nested Russian dolls, right? Each is a doll in and of itself, but the big doll would be complexity. And I think it's well positioned there for some thought leaders, and I tend to be persuaded like this, and I hate to use a fancy word, but complexity has ontological ramifications, meaning how it is that we know what is real. And I think that is one of the tension points that we feel, is that complexity as a global science is ontologically distinct from the sciences and the way we view the universe that supports or underpins complicated systems. Now, I didn't want to get into that in the book. It is implied in the book. And it is one of the reasons why it's so hard for us to make the shift to a complex set of mindsets, because it implies that we're deeply rooted in what we think is real, what reality is. And you're in philosophy and metaphysics when you're in that space. And I just thought a lot of leaders, I love that space. I know I'm a bit of an anomaly like that. Most of the leaders that I work with on a day-to-day basis, that's pretty unfamiliar territory. I didn't want to take the reader there, to be honest, but it is implied. And I think that's part of the reason why it's such an important mindset grouping to think about.
Well, Michael, we really look forward to our continued discussion on complexity and shifting towards unorthodoxy. So there is a lot more to unpack here, and I hope our readers will continue, listeners will continue to tune in to the next several podcasts in our series. Michael, on behalf of Baptist Memorial Healthcare, thank you so much for joining us today. We look forward to our continued dialogue on this topic.
I look forward to it.